Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So, It Gone being John Brennan, security clearance, former CIA director. Did President Trump make the right call? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Here's White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders reading the statement cobbled together by the president as to the basis for removing Brennan's security clearance.
As the head of the executive branch and commander-in-chief, I have a unique constitutional responsibility to protect the nation's classified information, including by controlling access to it. Today, in fulfilling that responsibility, I've decided to revoke the security clearance of John Brennan, former director of the Central Intelligence Agency. Historically, former heads of intelligence and law enforcement agencies have been allowed to retain access to classified information after their government service so that they can consult with their successors regarding matters about which they may have special insights and as a professional courtesy. Neither of these justifications supports Mr. Brennan's continued access to classified information. First, at this point in my administration, any benefits that senior officials might glean from consultations with Mr. Brennan are now outweighed by the risks posed by his erratic conduct and behavior. Second, that conduct and behavior has tested and far exceeded the limits of any professional courtesy that may have been due to him. Mr. Brennan has a history that calls into question his objectivity and credibility.
Bye-bye. Did he make the right call? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line.
Of course, he responded because he is employed by NBC News, so they were the first ones to get his reaction.
Mr. Brennan.
Revoking my security clearances is his way of trying to get back at me. But I think I have tried to voice the concerns of millions of Americans, and this is not going to deter me at all.
Yeah, you've voiced the concerns of millions of Americans. You call for the president to be executed.
Well, he said he's going to continue doing the fine work that he's been doing.
Calling for the president to be executed.
Not calling for him to be executed, but questioning his authority, questioning his decision-making process.
I'm sorry. The record reflects that John Brennan called for the president to be executed.
Oh, yeah.
He, after the Helsinki summit, he said he had committed an act of treason, which is punishable by death.
But President Trump has a right to protect this country. And the people in this country. I'm glad Brennan got his security clearance yanked. I'm surprised he didn't do it earlier because he's called him everything from a traitor to a danger to our country. And he's getting paid to tear down Trump.
Yesterday.
I mean, he's making six figures over there at NBC.
Yesterday, he compared him to foreign despots.
I've seen this type of behavior and actions on the part of foreign tyrants and despots and autocrats for many, many years during my CIA and national security career. I never, ever thought that I would see it here in the United States. And so I do believe that all Americans really need to take stock of what is happening right now in our government and how abnormal and how irresponsible and how dangerous these actions are.
Tweeting out, this action is part of a broader effort by Mr. Trump to suppress freedom of speech and punish critics. It should gravely worry all Americans, including intelligence professionals, about the cost of speaking out. My principles are worth far more than clearances. I will not relent. She's so heroic. Freedom of speech.
Freedom. Yeah.
How's that? How is this relevant?
It's freedom of speech. He has freedom of speech.
This is the sophistry you get from somebody who is without foundation. in that interview with Nicole Wallace on MSNBC, which is wasn't so much of an interview. It was so much of
ranting.
Nicole Wallace prompting him to spin conspiracy theories. What do you know that President Trump is so afraid of? What else do you know that we haven't heard yet that, and he doesn't have anything. He has these, you know, vague generalities about his standing and his heroism in his own mind, and nothing specific to offer other than the comparisons to despots and the suggestions of treason. And just in case you think that, Brennan and Mueller and Hayden and Clapper and Rice and Power, you know, these are independent-minded intelligence professionals. This isn't some sort of cabal. Not that we've seen that at the FBI with the senior leadership there, for example. Here's John Brennan on Bob Mueller.
I think he fears those types of criticisms. I think he fears individuals who could damage him, could damage his standing among the American people. And look at the way he's been referring to Bob Mueller. Bob Mueller, who is a national treasure, an icon within the law enforcement and justice communities, who's doing his level best to investigate Russian interference in the election. And the denigration of Bob Mueller, as well as his team of investigators, is reprehensible. It really is.
National treasure.
Didn't you know that, Dan?
I mean, Bob Mueller has respect within some Beltway circles. Some of that has been eroded during the course of his actual performance as a special counsel. So we judge people based on their performance and their conduct, not based on some stylized version of who they are offered by a sycophant like John Brennan. National treasure. There's the objectivity.
Let that soak in for a while.
So again, you know, in terms of the underlying substance of the matter, his clearance, isn't Trump right to say, what possible value could this individual provide my administration in any sort of consulting role that I would treat as credible?
Well, I don't trust them not to break the law in a way that would make the president look bad. I mean, really, and I don't understand, excuse my ignorance, I thought that once, you know, there's consequences from elections, and once you lost the election, I did not think that you still had security clearance, but apparently 4.1 million people have some form of security clearance.
Yeah. I mean, there's this gentleman's agreement that was referred to, this sort of cultural protocol.
And this is unprecedented. I mean, is this
that's all it is. It's a cultural protocol.
But is it unprecedented for a president to?
I don't care.
No, I'm saying because everyone, like, their hair's on fire. This has never happened before, and he's a tyrant, and this is, you know, only the beginning. Because Sarah Sanders did say yesterday they could pull Susan Rice's security clearance, Michael Hayden's
security clearance. They should.
I didn't even know they had it in the first place.
By the way, Brennan is, well, this was announced a few weeks ago that there are six individuals whose security clearances were under review, including the names you mentioned. Remember, Brennan is the individual waving around the phony baloney dossier, taking credit for the instigation of the investigation, the Russian collusion investigation, which National Treasure Bob Mueller is heading up. All of these individuals who take turns on Sunday talkies undermining the president, criticizing his every move, calling him a traitor to the country. But let's keep that. He should keep their security clearances because he might want to enlist them for their expertise and insight as he makes policy choices in the areas of national security. How much sense does that make? And Hayden.
Oh, yeah.
Former
NSA.
He's
getting a little squirmy. They interviewed him at the airport yesterday in baggage claim area.
So he's former NSA, former CIA. Listen to his reaction to Sarah Sanders' reading of the president's statement.
I mean, the way that Sarah Huckabee Sanders rolled this out was almost in a tone to be threatening to the rest of us. In other words, it looked to me like an attempt to make us change the things we are saying when we're asked questions on CNN or other networks. And I, frankly, for those of us who appear routinely on air, it's not going to have that effect. I certainly try to be respectful for both the office and the person of the president.
Do you? Remember, Michael Hayden was the individual who tweeted out a picture of Auschwitz and comparing it to the family separation policy at the border.
Yeah, that the same thing that's going on in Auschwitz is going in those camps.
So he tries to be respectful of the president in the office. He's very measured, former CIA, NSA. These guys, these dandies in the intel community, these glamour boys. Oh, Sarah Huckabee Sanders threatened me. Oh, President Trump is trying to intimidate me. What fragile little fellas these people are, aren't they? Get thee to an Ivy League lecture hall.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Goodbye to you.
Dan and Amy, remember how Trump took so much heat for saying that he could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and he wouldn't lose voters?
Right.
Has the D.C. press corps not become what they purport to despise? I mean, could not an anti-Trump political operative or an Obama-era intel official do the same thing and not lose the cheerleading they get from the D.C. press corps? Remember, it was the Washington Post calling for Obama to fire John Brennan because he lied about the CIA hacking into the computers of members of the Senate Intelligence Committee. And he lied about drone strikes not killing some civilians. There not being collateral damage with some of the drone strikes. Of course there was.
Yeah, he lied about that.
And Jim Clapper lied, excuse me, about the domestic surveillance program, the metadata collection that intelligence agencies were doing on Americans, and the domestic surveillance program that they were all sort of part and parcel of, and certainly propagating. All of that is by the boards. The skepticism of the CIA, intelligence committee, centralized government with massive law enforcement, all by the boards, because as long as you're anti-Trump, that's the only credential we care about.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, Joe Walsh here. I think the only shot Republicans have this November is to talk about what the American people care about. We'll talk about that when Freedom returns at 5.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Yeah, today's the day, as you previewed, Amy, that the press proves that they are an independent check on the powers that be.
They're fighting back.
They prove that they are thoughtful. They are protectorate of the people by colluding and publishing the same editorial, the same anti-Trump editorial.
Well, I think that they're worried that attacks on journalists will lead to violence. So that's why they've decided to fight back against President Trump, saying that the press is not the enemy of the people. That's just going to be the headline.
Mm-hmm. A free press needs you, New York Times. Mm-hmm. With a very high-minded quotes from Jefferson and the like. Answering the call last week from the Boston Globe, the Times is joining hundreds of newspapers from large metro dailies to small local weeklies to remind readers of the value of America's free press. These editorials, some of which we've excerpted together, affirm a fundamental American institution.
Please, should we be playing music behind this?
Please subscribe to your local papers because they're all failing. They can't turn a profit. Praise them when you think they've done a good job. Criticize them, of course.
Take them to death.
When you think they could do better. We're all in this together.
We pat yourself on the back, people.
Me and Salzburger.
Journalists are people, too.
We're all in it together.
Journalists have feelings, too.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Eddie Scari and Washington Examiner had a pretty good response to this navel-gazing collusion by the press corps. It's difficult to take the media's claims about attacks on the press seriously when they're constantly gaslighting the country. In just the 2 weeks, the media have completely stripped the word racist from any meaning by giving it every meaning. It's racist to call a black person dumb. It's racist to call a black person wacky. Even after the person surreptitiously records your conversations together and then calls you a racist. after a month, after Trump earlier this month mocked LeBron James as looking smart only compared to the dumbest man on television. Don Lemon, that would be, of course.
That'd be easy on my girlfriend.
The Post, the Amazon Post ran an analysis of who Trump has called dumb divided by race. So just for example, in terms of what the press does as being in it together with us, on our side of the skirmish line, fighting out against the demons and boogeymen that they create, you know, like the President of the United States. Enemy of the people, friend of the people, buddy, next door. Hey, the kind of guy you say, hey, Jim Acosta, can I borrow a cup of sugar? A good neighbor. Mm-hmm. That's the D.C. press corps. Don't you get it? These editorials serve as the equivalent of Rahm Emanuel putting on a cardigan sweater when it comes election time and saying, you know, I could do better. Sometimes I'm not as nice as I should be.
Oh, that's right. I remember those commercials.
But we're in this together.
Right, we are.
Come on over for a cup of joe if you're in the neighborhood. That's what all these editorialists are suggesting.
Walk down the street.
Yeah. We're friends. We care about one another. Huh?
Chicago Tribune printing this?
Oh, I have no doubt. Now, interestingly, one other editorial, it's getting a little bit of attention because of the, you know, by any means necessary philosophy of defeating Republicans and Trump, stopping Trump. Boy, Pelosi's admonition to Democrats got picked up by the Sacramento Bee. It's kind of working against her. The Sacramento Bee editorializing that Pelosi should give up her hopes of being Speaker.
Yeah, she knows that's not going to happen, right?
The Republican Party is now clearly the party of Donald Trump. The Democrat Party cannot be seen as the party of Nancy Pelosi and win in November. The San Francisco Democrat must put her party and her country ahead of her personal ambition and declare that she will not seek the speakership again. Wow. They point out that 45 Democrat nominees for Congress and 10 incumbents have publicly said they will not support Pelosi for Speaker. The party's kind of left her. She's not left enough anymore.
Right.
So it's just interesting to see the kind of the new socialist Democrat Party with the emphasis on socialist. And Pelosi's basically on board for all of this from a policy perspective. She doesn't care about policy. She cares about power. So if that's where this needs to go, then she'll go there. But she's sort of like Denny Hastert. She's a mechanic. She's not a visionary. And what Sanders and Ocasio-Cortez and these other socialists think they are is visionaries. They're socialist ideologues. Nancy Pelosi is just a power monger, and that's not good enough anymore. And apparently the Sacramento Bee agrees.
Well, if the Democrats take over the House, what do they need, 23 seats to flip it? Who's going to be Speaker then? If not Nancy Pelosi, who?
I don't know. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Oh.
She's the intellectual leader of the party. Comrade Bernie can be Senate President. He can take over for Pagliacci in the Senate. Well, a Senate Majority Leader. I mean, except they're not going to take the Senate. That seems highly unlikely. Maybe Senate Minority Leader, since Chuck Schumer fails to marshal a majority in the Senate.
Well, speaking of the Democratic Party in Vermont, the first ever transgender has won her party's gubernatorial nomination.
Huge win over that 14-year-old kid.
Christine Hallquist used to be Pat. No. She's current CEO of a energy company, and her story is fascinating. But now she's Christine, a he, now a she. And she told CNN she doesn't sure what socialism is.
This poll didn't ask people to choose between capitalism and socialism. But when faced with a choice between the two, it does sound like you look more favorably, again, the labels you have an issue with, on the ideas behind socialism.
Well, yes, and I'm not sure I even know what socialism is. So I just don't have the background to answer that question.
Boy, she has a voice like a songbird.
What are you talking about?
I could not distinguish the voice of the CNN reporter from the voice of the candidate. Which was what?
The person who does not know what socialism is. She talks like this.
She's post label.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Mm-hmm. What was her first name before she became Christine? But she went into one of the meetings as, you know, she was a man, and then the next day came in as a woman, and people didn't know it. She didn't prepare them, so they were confused. Like, where did Larry go? What's going on? And she said most people accepted her, and she said she'd been cross-dressing for a long time.
Sure. Yeah, of course.
And decided to go full throttle.
No, it'll certainly elevate Vermont's standing as a place we should take seriously. But, I mean, I get it. You know, sometimes you feel like nuts, and sometimes you don't.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. We're talking about all those editorials that will be popping up in your dailies and regional weekly papers today.
Maybe the Pioneer Press will have it. Maybe. Is the Pioneer Press still around?
Yeah, making sure that you understand that press... your buddies.
No, and don't.
Not enemy of the state.
They just want to make sure that all these, you know, verbal attacks on them, that doesn't lead to violence.
Yeah, that's what they want to make sure. Mm-hmm. Ari Fleischer had a good tweet yesterday on this topic. The MSM, which loves to criticize Sinclair Media when Sinclair has its TV stations carry the same editorial message, collude to act like Sinclair. So long as the message is anti-Trump, once again, the media doubles down on its own double standard. Yeah, that's about right. Randy, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, I got a couple of weeks ago, somebody described you guys as small potatoes. But anyway, besides that, how should I say this? When the president describes the media as enemies of the people, or should I say the media is trying to take down the president, that was voted in by the people, and they're trying to take them down, then they are the enemy of the people, are they not?
All right. Thanks for the call, Randy. Well, I wrote an editorial about this a couple of weeks ago, just going through what the D.C. Press Corps has done, not just recently, but since the New Deal. And they're cheerleading for every big government gambit that we as a country have indulged for the last 70 years and how that's gone. I don't know if... that makes some of them the enemy of the people. But I know the term for them is not friend either. Brian in Oak Forest, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
I was just interested in finding out why I haven't heard anything on the radio show yesterday or this morning about the New Mexico compound.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Brian.
We did discuss it.
We did.
A few times. We haven't discussed it those... Four are out. They're out on bond, but they have GPS monitoring systems.
We're going to talk about it before the show's over, including the woman who was illegally present in this country for 2 decades. So in the context of immigration enforcement as well, I know that's not popular in Chicago, but it may be gaining some popularity out there on the hustings. So we will talk about it. Thanks for the call, Brian.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. It's Hug a Journalist Day. So if you see a journalist on the streets or you know a journalist, make sure to give them a warm embrace and tell them, hey, pal.
Is that why you and Mike Scott were doing a bro hug in the hallway there? I was wondering what was going on.
You're not my enemy.
I like you.
The New York Times told me we're in this together.
Well, they've joined forces.
As long as we agree to hate Trump.
Yeah, 300 plus newspapers to get the message out that we are your friends. The press is your friend. Mm-hmm. And they're doing it because they believe Trump's, you know, inflated rhetoric might cause violent activity. Take, for instance, MSNBC's Katie Tour. She said She had somebody write to her, I hope you get raped and killed. Raped and killed. And then she said, and it's not just me, but a couple of my female colleagues as well are receiving threatening letters. One of the letters ended with M-A-G-A.
Oh, my gosh.
Trump's slogan, Make America Great Again.
So here's the thing. Obviously, it's wrong to threaten people. I mean, I feel like this is a kindergarten class. And there are...
keep your hands to yourself.
There are people that are marginally attached to reality out there. There are people that get overheated and say and do things they shouldn't say and do. And so that's unfortunate. I don't support anybody making threats of violence against Katie Tor, anybody else in the media. And oh, by the way, you know, conservatives are subject to threats and weirdness, conservatives in the media and elsewhere as well, including, by the way, the President of the United States. That's why he's got a whole phalanx of Secret Service folks. And we've talked and, you know, there's been some public accounting for some of the threats that have been leveled against President Trump, some prosecutions for people who threatened Trump. How about Republican softball practice?
Yeah, let's not forget that.
I don't remember 200 papers coming together to opine about that Bernie Sanders supporters. So, no, there's no promotion of violence. There's no acceptance of threatening anybody. But the idea that Katie Tur gets some threatening notes, and that's the basis to legitimize their jihad against President Trump. No, I mean, I'm sorry, that just doesn't wash. It's just not even close. And again, Ari Fleischer pointing out the hypocrisy of, you know, they ridicule Sinclair when they have their on-air personalities essentially offer the mission statement of Sinclair, the value proposition of Sinclair Media Properties. But when they editorialize, their anti-Trump position cloaked in we're your friend, not an enemy of the people, we're supposed to take that at face value rather than see it for the leftist hypocrisy that it is. No, I don't think so.
312-642-5600 is our turnkey.pro answer line. 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Mike in Crown Point.
Good morning, guys. I just want to make the point. I saw Pedestrian as soon as his new movie last night. And, you know, this is a big misdirection by the media. What's going on here is they've been exposed as being proud of the Democratic Party. And, you know, if you look at the Nazi manual that Hitler put together while he was in prison, well, one of the first things he did was get control of the media. I mean, so I have no compunction to punish anybody, but, you know, if, just admit you've been in the tank for the Democratic Party, you're supporting them, and I wouldn't dismiss this whole thing.
Thanks for the call, Mike. I mean, you don't have to admit it because we have the voting records. We know. Gallup has done the survey research. We know for the last 50 years, 84% to 92% of the Gang of 500, the D.C. press corps, has voted for the Democrat nominee for president. So I ask the question I ask all the time and will restate, because you should ask your journalist friends when you give them a hug today. Do you think the stories selected and the way they are covered would have been different over the last half century if a overwhelming majority of the members of the D.C. press corps had been voting for the Republican nominee for president? You think that that worldview and its near unanimity influences the coverage that's provided? Simple question.
Both the Sun-Times and Chicago Tribune have the editorial today.
Thank goodness.
I'm still working on the Pioneer Press.
Glad to see they're falling in line. Bob in Buffalo Grove.
Thanks for taking my call, Amy and Dan. Last night on TV, Fox News had a graphic that's very telling. 71% of the public has no trust in the media. 25% does. I think that speaks to the issue in terms of what's going on. And one other final comment. You didn't mention whose birthday it was yesterday. And what she said about it.
Today's
her birthday wish.
Ooh.
Who?
Maxine.
I'm baffled. Oh, Maxine Waters?
Yeah, and you know what her birthday wish was?
Trump to be impeached.
Yeah, something like that.
All right. Thanks, Bob. Appreciate it.
Today's the 41st anniversary of Elvis Presley's death.
Alleged death.
Oh, don't tell me he's still alive.
Very much alive.
Did you see him at Woodfield Mall? Is that what you're saying?
Zach
on the second floor?
He asked me not to disclose where he's hanging out these days. Mike on the north side.
Good morning, kids. Thanks for taking my call. I'm happy that the press is being bullied and threatened.
Well,
how do they like it? They've been doing it to us for years. If you don't go for their candidate, they call you stupid, they call you racist, they call you a Nazi. Well, you know what? If you're going to bully someone, you got to back it up. And if you can't, if, you know, your body can't cash the check that your mouth wrote, you're going to catch the beating. And this is just what's happening now. They're getting their own medicine. You can't bully someone and overtax them and take their money and expect them to say thank you.
No.
Now they
rhetorically, Mike, let's keep it at the limit of rhetoric is the point. And not, you know, rhetoric that contains threats of violence. You can't run around threatening to hurt people or criminally violate them. That doesn't make much sense, does it?
Well, you can't, and I can't, but it seems like they can. Their friends in the Antifa movement, they do it, and they don't report it. Everything is one-sided. We're all evil, and, you know, now that they're over their, you know, apoplexy of who's going to direct the next Guardians of the Galaxy movie, now they're turning back to jumping on Trump. Well, you know what? We're tired of this. We're not buying your newspapers. We're not watching your TV shows. You're all losing your big salaries. You're all going to be driving Uber on nights and weekends. That's what the media's done to themselves.
Thanks for the call, Mike. And good use of the word apoplexy, by the way. And
that's the word of the day, apoplexy, common spelling.
And some have...
some reporters have retired and are driving Ubers.
I think like what, three or four of the Ponce brothers are doing it. How many are there?
There's... two. One is, but he's turned it into a blog, I guess, or something like that. And then the other Ponce is coming out with his single album, Reflections, in the Dan Ponce's got a single album coming out in the fall.
Dan Ponce
sings dance compy. No.
Dan Ponce sings Gordon Lightfoot. Is that what we can look forward to? so talented, the press corps. Mike in Melrose Park.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
Hey, I remember probably 10 or 15 years ago, the guy that was then president of NBC had a double full-page editorial in the Chicago Tribune as to gun control and wanting to take our guns away and how bad guns were and everything. And it seems to me once you want to start taking people's amendments or amendment rights away, you become the enemy of the people. And maybe we should start with the First Amendment and see how that works out for them. And then we'll go on with the other ones if that seems good.
Well, yeah,
Mike,
it's a fair point that you raised. Thanks for the call. And we've talked about it in the context of these shootings. The press loves to cheerlead eliminating the Second Amendment, much less further restricting individual Second Amendment rights.
But in this editorial...
Do they want to have the conversation about restricting First Amendment rights when it comes to what they can report, how they can report on school shootings based on, you know, what we know about the psychology of a potential mass murderer, like, for example, using their name and amplifying their infamy? So should we have the government tell the New York Times what they can and can't report about a school shooting? You know, in the interest of public safety, just as they would restrict your constitutional individual Second Amendment right for of self-protection in the interest of public safety. They don't want to have that conversation. I mean, the reason the press backed to Bob from Buffalo Grove, only a quarter of the people place any trust in the press corps, is because they're hypocrites, transparently so. And that doesn't inspire confidence.
They also say, you know, we aren't enemies of the people, but we're a check on government.
No, you're not. That's the point, actually. The point is the Fourth Estate is not serving as the Fourth Estate. You are not watching the Watchmen. your position changes as the political balance of power does. So the people you were skeptical of, who lie to the American people repeatedly, Brennan, Hayden, Clapper, Comey, you're not skeptical of in this context because they're antagonists to the president. So how are you a check on power? It was in the editorial pages of the Amazon Post and the Guardian in 2014, just a few years ago, that liberals were calling on President Obama to fire John Brennan because of his repeated lies. John Brennan, going back to post 9/11, was a supporter of the enhanced interrogation techniques that was the basis of vilifying Dick Cheney. Well, John Brennan was there, and he lied about the hacking into Senate Intel Committee members' computers to spot, to gain access to whistleblowers' emails, legally protected whistleblowers' emails. And he lied about the carnage inflicted by drone strikes.
Well, that's proof enough to get his credentials yanked.
Well, that's why the liberals were calling for him to be fired. Now, according to those same liberals,
he's a hero. He's being vilified. Poor guy. Let's rally around him. Do they have a GoFundMe page yet for him?
Yeah, right.
I mean, come on.
Seriously.
Let's kick that into gear.
Now John Brennan is what he believes Bob Mueller is, a national treasure. It's amazing how you can go from being a villain,
to a
according
victim.
To the D.C. press corps, to a national treasure, depending on what their interests are. So the idea that they're objective scriveners of the daily events, or that they don't have a perspective and a agenda as a group based on the, as I said, ubiquity of one philosophy within that core is absurd. And people who are paying even passing attention see it. Mark in Libertyville.
Yeah, morning, guys. Love the show. Hey, just to add on to one thing as far as the, if it's not clear enough that the media is completely in the tank for the Democratic Party, I don't know if you guys recall that those WikiLeaks came out prior to the 16 election that indicated all, it was just, I think there was 20, 25 of them that were attending these Democratic cocktail parties that nobody would have known had WikiLeaks not exposed all this. If that's not just further evidence that that the left is in the tank, and I guess what do you expect our president to do other than go around? Because anything he says or does is going to get misconstrued anyway. So that's all I have to say.
Thanks for the call, Mark. Glenn Thrush, he was elevated from Politico to New York Times after he characterized himself during the 2016 campaign as in the tank for Hillary. I mean, this is not a close call. There is virtually no evidence to support a position that is counter to the one that I'm expressing. There's no evidence. You can say it's great that the D.C. press corps is completely in the tank for the left. You can say that it's awesome the D.C. press corps has flown the flag for big government and big government gambits from the New Deal forward, at least. So that everything that we see in the federal government, its expanse and its expense and its intrusiveness into daily life and the fights that we have about individual rights versus the federal government, and the D.C. press corps is almost always on the side of the federal government and centralized power, except as it relates to them. You could say you like that, but you can't say that's not the reality on the ground, and it hasn't been for generations. Craig in Mount Greenwood.
Hey, Dan and Amy. I'll tell you what, this subject has got to be get out there because it's exactly like you say it. And what's going on is they're getting worse all the time. And now that there's they get a little bit of heat because they are not journalists at all. That is all propaganda they put out. And when you see all of the it's not so much the bad things that they say about Trump. They don't share any of the good news. There are so many good things and stuff that if it was Obama or Hillary, they would be, that's all you would hear about is all the accomplishments and everything. But that's the part that gets me the worst is how they leave it all out. You don't get any of it. It's so unfair to not only the administration, but to us, the people that put them in office, and that we want to notice, we want to hear it. We want the people around us that didn't vote for him to hear it, and they don't hear it.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Craig. Appreciate it. Well, the good news for us is that because that is the reality on the ground, conservative talk radio gives people like Amy and me phony baloney jobs where we get paid a lot of money to work 20 hours a week.
Tons.
So
we don't work 20 hours a week.
So that's the good news.
Yeah.
I work 5 to 9. That's it. 5 to 9 a day. That is all. That's all I'm required to do. That's all I do.
No,
bare minimum.
Prepare at night or early in the morning for the next day show.
Clay.
Maybe work 4 to 9.
Clay in the loop.
Hey, guys. I had a question. You know, this whole thing, this whole liberalism experiment of the 20th century started, you know, back in the late 1800s. We got psychology, we got flight, we got trains, we got automobiles, we got all this new stuff. So I get that they thought, you know, hey, maybe we can control government, maybe we can make it better. And it obviously didn't work. So it's been trailing off for years, and they're starting to get into their death throes of just absolute craziness. Where do you see this going in the next 20, 30 years? You think they're... you know, a generation is going to shake it off and we'll get back to normalcy, or is it going to get worse?
Well, that's a good question. Thanks for the call, Clay. I'm not sure it's clear. It's not clear to me where this goes in the next 20, 30 years. I mean, there's so many countervailing forces. On the one hand, you have technology and the extension of opportunities. You have new ideas coming to the fore, like school choice, that are gaining more traction. So to introduce competition in K-12, which provides some hope for improving the quality of K-12 education. On the other hand, we're less of an ownership society. We're more sedentary. You have one of the two major parties going full socialist. So how does that shake out? You have, you know, no sort of common culture. This was the discussion we had at the end of the show yesterday with Mr. Crocker from Regnery Publishing about a potentially forthcoming civil war that'll be worse than the last one because there is no common culture anymore when you can't even agree that there are two sexes. There's no basis to say we're trying to get to the same place. No, we clearly are not, actually. Isn't that what Andrew Cuomo said yesterday?
We're not going to make America great again. It was never that great.
America was never that great. Governor,
this is Michelle Obama moment when she said, I've never felt American until my husband won the nomination.
Those are excited utterances,
wow.
You know, Freudian slips from Cuomo, just like, as you said, Michelle Obama. Oof. That's what they really believe. But they're going to perfect America through government power. They're very different visions for America.
America is a best place to live. They should try living outside of the country for a while. You'll appreciate America a lot more.
I would applaud Trust them me. Living outside the country. Jim in Tampa.
Good morning, guys, and thanks for taking my call. I'm going to try to make this clear. Not only, Dan, is there not any evidence to go against your argument, but there's solid evidence to counter and say this: the way you guys do it is the way you should do it. Mike on the north side calls and says, you know, your body shouldn't be able to cash a check that your mouth writes or whatever it was he said. Now, if you listen to the media report that, they've got a picture of Mike as a knuckle-dragging guy who can't think for himself, and that's how they picture all of us. What do? You say, hey, Mike, shouldn't we pull this back? And Mike shoots right back with a solid point on Antifa. This is how you should do it, back and forth, respect for each other, not these set pieces that they have us all in. And that's my point. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
Listen to podcasts of Dan and Amy from the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
What? I love this song. Drake. God's
Plan. I know who it is.
You don't like it? I love this song. It's nice. It's one of the nicer rap songs.
I don't understand. I honestly don't understand this guy's career.
Between Travis Scott and... Really?
I don't understand it.
He's one of the good ones compared to the other stuff out there.
Well, I mean, maybe in terms of like... not using profanity and so forth, but I just,
you know,
I have nothing personal against him. I just don't get it. I don't get Carson Daly. I don't get that career.
Oh, yeah.
And there's nothing personal. I just don't understand it. So I don't understand Drake.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Now, Alice in Chains, I get. Don't get Drake. Okay. Do get Alice in Chains. Yesterday, Sarah Sanders made the announcement, reading a prepared statement during her press briefing from the president as to the revocation of one former CIA director, John Brennan's security clearance.
As the head of the executive branch and commander-in-chief, I have a unique constitutional responsibility to protect the nation's classified information, including by controlling access to it. Today, in fulfilling that responsibility, I've decided to revoke the security clearance of John Brennan, former director of the Central Intelligence Agency. Historically, former heads of intelligence and law enforcement agencies have been allowed to retain access to classified information after their government service so that they can consult with their successors regarding matters about which they may have special insights and as a professional courtesy. Neither of these justifications supports Mr. Brennan's continued access to classified information. First, at this point in my administration, any benefits that senior officials might glean from consultations with Mr. Brennan are now outweighed by the risks posed by his erratic conduct and behavior. Second, that conduct and behavior has tested and far exceeded the limits of any professional courtesy that may have been due to him. Mr. Brennan has a history that calls into question his objectivity and credibility.
And if you were hearing what John Brennan was hearing, then you would conclude the same thing, that that statement sounded like something that Idi Amin would give, that Robert Mugabe would give. Foreign despots and dictators, that's who do the kind of things that were was done to him.
I've seen this type of behavior and actions on the part of foreign tyrants and despots and autocrats for many, many years during my CIA and national security career.
Yeah, this is an effort to intimidate and silence. And Michael Hayden, former NSA director.
Yeah, who might be next on the list, who they actually caught up with a baggage claim at Reagan International Airport.
I don't know if he's going to be able to handle it. He was almost brought to tears by Sarah Sanders' dramatic reading of President Trump's statement.
I mean, the way that Sarah Huckabee Sanders rolled this out was almost in a tone to be threatening to the rest of us.
Oh, my gosh. I could be next. Oh, golly. Ugh. Boy. Not so stout of heart there, the heads of our intelligence agencies.
A little skirmish over there.
A little fragile, I would say. Wouldn't you?
Me?
Now, to be fair, as I try to be occasionally.
Occasionally.
Washington Examiner opines on this. Conservative outlet, conservative editorials. Trump is wrong to suspend John Brennan's clearance. Allowing his understandable offense at Brennan's frequent and ferocious criticisms to drive his policy decisions, Trump has put his ego before the national interests, writes Tom Rogan at the Washington Examiner. He points out, for example, Brennan is fresh off his role as CIA director, and there may be ongoing missions for which even a detestable figure like Brennan could offer insight for the president in his national security foreign intelligence team. All right, we're going to have somebody adjudicate this, and I can't think of anybody better than Alberto Gonzalez, who is a former United States Attorney General, of course, under President Bush, George W. Bush. Now he is Dean of Belmont University School of Law in Nashville, and he's also the author of the book True Faith and Allegiance, A Story of Service and Sacrifice in War and Peace. General Gonzalez, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
All right. So, Judge Gonzalez, how do you rule in this matter of John Brennan's revocation?
Well, there are all kinds of thoughts and considerations to weigh here. You know, the president does have the authority to do this, and quite frankly, also has the obligation to protect the nation's secrets. But I'm not sure that I can take at face value what Sarah Huckabee Sanders wrote in terms of this was done for national security reasons. You look at the fact that the statement itself was dated July 26th. In fact, it was so vital to do this, to protect our national security interests. You know, why was this created several weeks ago? And the other thing I would just say is that, again, the president has the authority to do this, but in doing so, I think he's, he's created a situation where he looks a little childish and I think a little vindictive, and has given ammunition to those who claim that he's just simply trying to muzzle critics. And no question, I think that John Brennan has been very extreme in his criticism of the president. I think at times it's got personal, and I can understand the president being upset, angry, irritated at some of Brennan's statements. But as president of the United States, you're going to be criticized all the time by experts and by kooks.
Yeah,
and I just think you have to be very careful about how you respond to that kind of criticism. Sometimes the criticism is warranted, sometimes not. But nonetheless, you know, we're here talking about this, and there's just so many other important issues confronting our country. And you know, I just worry about the reaction sometimes the president has with respect to criticism. And I think you know, again, this may be another example where perhaps he overreacted, but, you know, there's no question that he had the authority to do this.
Well, I mean, we all know President Trump is not thick-skinned, and I always question the timing of things, too. I mean, why now? You know, it takes our focus off Omarosa, that scandal, and then the fact that his former campaign chairman is his trial is coming to an end and the jury's beginning deliberations.
Well, that's certainly true. I don't know whether or not that it's simply a coincidence. I think you're right to question it, because as I said in the opening, you know, the fact the statement was dated July 26th, you kind of have to wonder, well, if it was really so important in protection of our national security, why the delay? Why not? Why wasn't it done back in July, perhaps even earlier? But anyway, so I think, as I said, I think that unfortunately, this again is another incident where the president has taken some actions which I think unfortunately diverts the attention of the country and our leadership on issues that are really, really important for our national security and our domestic security and our, you know, there's so many other things we should be focused on right now that I think that's regrettable.
Well, let me see if I can persuade you on this topic. So I thought how you're describing this is how I describe the whole Omarosa flap, and I thought his engagement on that was without point or usefulness. This, however, it to me is different, and I'm not just talking about Brennan. I am talking about Hayden and Clapper and Rice and Power. We have not gotten satisfactory information about, or much less a prosecution, about the improper, illegal unmasking of General Flynn. We don't really have a handle on the unmasking that was going on in the late stages of the Obama administration by senior intelligence officials and the basis for those unmaskings. We have seen that Brennan has claimed credit for launching the Russian collusion investigation by National Treasure, as he calls him, Bob Mueller, taking credit for a dossier that has been completely unverified, that he was out there promoting it. And that's after he has lied to Congress any number of times about both the drone strike program as well as spying, hacking into the computers of members of the Senate Intelligence Committee. After he supported the same enhanced interrogation techniques post 9/11 that were the basis of the vilification of Dick Cheney by the D.C. press corps. Obviously, we know Clapper lied to Congress and to the American people about the metadata program. We've seen the senior leadership of the FBI completely compromised and embarrassed and disgraced, including this week with the termination of Peter Strzok and their handling of both the Hillary Clinton email investigation and the Russian collusion investigation. And you have the distrust of these institutions, which are important, at an all-time low because of the behavior of the leadership of those institutions. So it seems to me that Trump shouldn't stop with Brennan. He should eliminate the security clearances for all of these guys and girls. And if they want to go talk on CNN and MSNBC, they're welcome to do that. I don't care what they have to say. This has nothing to do with free speech. But they don't have a constitutional right to security clearances or classified information to use for whatever dubious purposes they've used that information previously and recently. There's a whole cleanup of these agencies that needs to be done, and it starts with holding some of these names that are the most high profile as critics of the president accountable, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, you've given me a lot to respond to.
Yes, I have.
You're right. 3 minute question.
Well, you know, that was my that was my closing argument. Now you get a closing argument.
Well, clearly there have been some serious lapses in judgment in the leadership of not only our intelligence agencies, but also our law enforcement agencies. I think that we have to remember that President Trump has been in office for over a year. He's had his people in for some period of time. And so, you know, at some point, you've got to decide, okay, we've looked at what's happened in the past. There's been either appropriate accountability or maybe we don't believe there's been appropriate accountability. But nonetheless, at some point, we have to move forward. And I truly believe that, for example, this notion that Brennan led his leadership, you know, has led to the Mueller investigation. The FBI is going to make an independent assessment, and then the Department of Justice will make an independent assessment, irrespective of what the intelligence community says, about whether or not to conduct an investigation and to move forward with the prosecution. So, you know, it's true that John Brennan might have brought forward some information to the Department of Justice, but at some point, it no longer is John Brennan's responsibility, or no longer can he claim credit for the Mueller investigation. It will be the senior people at the Department of Justice who decide there's enough here to do an investigation and there's enough here to move forward with the prosecution. I don't know what Bob Mueller knows. What I do know is that there appears to be uniform agreement that Russia interfered with our elections. And for that reason alone, I think I've said this on this show, and I've said this repeatedly, for that reason alone, the Mueller investigation should be allowed to continue, irrespective of all the stuff that you rattled off. And I don't know if I agree with all of it, but I certainly agree with most of it. So I worry again, Republicans remained bitter, angry about what happened in the past. Democrats, you know, are going crazy. They're in a frenzy about the possibility of collusion. And, you know, I really worry about where we are today as a country. I, for one, have confidence in Bob Mueller. I know a lot of people don't. They question his integrity. They question his motives. And Bob was the FBI director when I was the attorney general. I don't think Bob is going to be affected one iota by any criticism or anything that Donald Trump does. Not a whit. I don't think he's going to be affected by anything that Rudy Giuliani says. I just think he's got a mission, which is to find out what happened. And when he believes that he's done all that he can do, he's going to present those findings to the Deputy Attorney General. And then the Department of Justice, Rod Rosenstein, is going to make a decision as to whether or not this moves forward and how it moves forward. So, you know, we just have to wait and see how it all plays out.
I have a quick question for you. Do you still have your security clearance?
No, I do not have my security clearance. And as a general matter, I wouldn't use it. I don't believe that I would need it again, because from the law enforcement side, you know, we're not, I suppose we are in a way part of the intelligence community, but certainly not in the way that the NSA is, the CIA is. So, but no, I don't have my security clearance.
All right.
Okay. And I'm doing just fine.
All right. Very good.
You're surviving.
And you've retained all your free speech rights as well, which is good.
Absolutely.
He is former United States Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, also a counselor to the president, now the dean of Belmont University School of Law in Nashville, Tennessee. The book, True Faith and Allegiance, A Story of Service and Sacrifice in War and Peace. General Gonzalez, always good to have you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
And go Bruins. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. We'll continue our discussion about John Brennan and the revocation of his security clearance. All this is to say, you know, there's mixed opinion among Republicans on it. But Rand Paul is happy. I mean, he was calling for it weeks ago when the prospect first came up that this could happen as the Trump administration reviewing the security clearances to a number of Obama-era intel officials.
You know, I told the president in private what I've been saying in public, that I think there's a great danger to having talking heads on TV who are ex-CIA agents and still have classified clearance. There's a real danger that they might inadvertently reveal classified information. And, you know, John Brennan's got a history of this. Back in 2012, when we were discussing, you know, we discovered the underwear bomber, John Brennan at that time briefed ex-CIA agents who were retired but still had top secret clearance. He briefed them and said, oh, don't worry, the U.S. has someone inside. We have inside control. Well, then one of these ex-CIA agents went on television and said, oh, yeah, we have a double agent and nobody needs to worry. And it's like, whoops, the double agent was still there. So John Brennan's already been involved when he was on the inside leaking information to people who still had top secret clearance who were now talking heads. John Brennan leaked information that almost cost the life of a double agent. This is 4 years ago now.
And
that's just one of the discrepancies.
And at least Rand Paul is consistent, too, about, you know, once your time in government is over, unless there's extenuating circumstances, just as a matter of course, security clearances should be revoked. And I'm sort of with him in that camp, but I'm certainly with President Trump on this one and the rest of the security clearances for this, the remaining persons of interest, if you will, Power and Hayden and Clapper should also go, as far as I'm concerned. For more on this, as well as the Manafort trial, which goes to the jury today, we're pleased to be joined again by Andy McCarthy, who's a former chief assistant U.S. attorney in Manhattan and now contributing editor at National Review. Andy, thanks for being with us again. Appreciate it.
Dan, Amy, how are you?
Good. As somebody who worked in the Department of Justice and U.S. Attorney's Office in Manhattan, what's your view on security clearances with respect to law enforcement or intelligence officers after their careers in federal government are over?
Well, I think at some high-ranking levels, Dan, it's worthwhile to allow people to keep their security clearances, because there's often with the incumbent people a need for the to be able to resort and consult with their predecessors for institutional memory, for things that went on, for advice and that kind of consultation. I mean, I think it's helpful to the country that, for example, I have no idea if Jim Woolsey still has his security clearance, but I think it would be a good thing for the country, for the Secretary of State or the CIA director to be able to bring in Jim Woolsey and say, you know, here's what's going on. What do you think?
Right. I see that.
On the other hand, I'm a firm believer in that the principle that if you politicize intelligence, you should be gone in terms of your security clearance. And what I have resented about Brennan, I don't begrudge him having political views, and I don't, you know, you certainly don't forfeit that when you get a security clearance. But what I think is really poisonous is this idea of former intel guys who go on television mm-hmm. and give you in this kind of sotto voce, nod in a wink way, you know, if only I could tell you what I knew, you'd be demanding Trump's impeachment forthwith. That kind of game is not what, you know, that's not what's supposed to be played. I was looking this morning, interestingly, because I thought you might bring this up. I was comparing Brennan's tweets to General Hayden's tweets. And, you know, I think a number of General Hayden's tweets, General Hayden was also a CIA director in the past. I think a number of General Hayden's tweets are ill-advised for him, you know, for example, comparing yes. Trump's border enforcement policy to Nazi Germany. I think that's a mistake on his part. But at least it's a political policy objection. He's not out there saying, you know, I have all this secret information, and when it finally all comes to light, everyone's going to see how corrupt the president is, which is the game that Brennan's playing. And again, I think you got to draw the line between people's right to hold political positions versus a right they don't have, which is to exploit their privileged access to intelligence for political purposes. Well,
the left is saying that Trump is taking revenge on a critical voice. But he was critical. I mean, he called him everything from a traitor to a danger to this country.
Yeah. You know, Amy, here's the problem. I mean, I think you could probably come up pretty quickly with about 10 different times that President Trump does the right thing for perhaps the wrong reason. And I think it would have been better for him. And I'm not, this is not Monday morning quarterbacking. I said this when this issue first came to the fore, you know, 6 weeks ago or whatever it was. I think he would have been better served by taking somebody who had a lot of respect, or maybe a couple of people who had a lot of respect on both sides of the aisle for intelligence experience. You know, people like, I don't want to go into it because I'll leave somebody out. But my point at the time was, review all the people who are former government officials who have security clearances with an eye toward, do we really need them to have them? And have they done anything to abuse them? And then I would have put Brennan in the pot of, you know, the first pot of people that got it yanked, so that it didn't either appear to be, or that it wasn't, in fact, just a political retribution, and, you know, just the kind of games playing that goes on. I think that the president would have been much better served by doing it that way than singling Brennan out the way he has.
Well, yeah, I think that's a fair point, although there's two additional points. One is, you say, I mean, Brennan, he essentially has no utility to this administration, so why would I allow him to continue having a security clearance? I'm not going to solicit his advice, nor are my relevant agency heads, and we wouldn't believe it if he, you know, offered it or we solicited it because of everything that we've just described in terms of what he said, and he has the secret knowledge, and he takes credit for the entire Trump collusion investigation. So he has no utility. We don't see him as a valuable asset. So why should he be conferred this special status? He shouldn't be. And then in terms of Brennan and the left and the whole silencing matter, I mean, the irony is lost on a guy saying he's being silenced by the president, who's talking about being silenced by the president on cable TV news networks and in an op-ed in the New York Times today.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess two things. On your last point, you know, in the former administration, when people with top secret clearances like General Flynn and General Mattis said things that were based on fact but cut against administration narratives, they didn't lose their security clearances. They lost their jobs, right? So they had a way of purging people as well. And there's a political component to this sort of thing. There always is. On the other hand, and this goes back to your first point about whether we really need these people to have security clearances or not, I totally agree that if somebody abuses or exploits his privileged access to national defense information, that access ought to be yanked. But on the other hand, if you remember, it was only about a month ago, maybe more than that, we had Peter Strzok in a congressional hearing. I was going to say on the stand, but he wasn't in a courtroom. He was at a congressional hearing, and he gave very extensive testimony after giving extensive testimony out of the public eye. And before he gave that testimony, he had to have access to the classified information in order to be able to answer Congress's questions. Now, you know, admittedly, he didn't answer all of Congress's questions, but the point you can easily understand is that he still has current relevant knowledge and is still a relevant person in connection with investigations that Congress is conducting. So I think you have to take it on a case-by-case basis and say, is there still – I agree with this part of what you're saying. Is there still a current need for this person, whether he agrees with the administration, whether we find him useful or not, is there still a current need for him to have access? Because as a practical matter, we know we're going to need him to testify, and he can't really testify unless he can review the documents.
Yeah, that's
true. So you don't think President Trump's going to pull his security clearance?
Yeah, but Amy, what if he pulls it and then they have to give it back to him because it turns out that
the inspector general needs to talk to him in order to complete the investigation into the FISA abuse.
Or if,
you know, it's going to look silly if they yank it and then they just have to give it back to him, or else he can't testify. I mean, it's not fair. I'm no Strzok fan,
right,
but I'm a sort of a due process fan, right? And I did this for a long time. You have to give people a fair, if you're going to say that they're relevant witnesses, you have to give them a fair opportunity to testify truthfully and completely. And if they need to review documents in order to do that, I think you got to let them do it.
Sure. I mean, the president could need Brennan or Clapper to go lie before Congress again. So you never know when that'll be useful.
But Dan, I'm distinguishing Brennan because I think he did abuse his privileged access.
And no, I know.
If you abuse your privileged access, you shouldn't get it.
Yeah, I hear. I mean,
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
We're not in disagreement.
No, I know.
I just have experience with a number of these situations where you think you're cutting someone off because you don't need them anymore, and then you turn out, you know, lo and behold, you need them. And I'm saying that I have experience in this because these are mistakes I've made, just like everybody else makes. You know, you think you're not going to need some source of information, so you burn them, and then all of a sudden, unanticipated things come up, and what do you know? You need to talk to the guy again.
That's a fair point, and I think the idea of this being done on a case by case basis makes a lot of sense. So I don't disagree with that. I want to get your take on the Manafort trials that goes to the jury today, because I know you've been following it and you've written extensively about it at National Review online. And
the defense called no witnesses.
It was
not one.
An interesting strategic choice to not mount a defense, and it seems to me that the Manafort defense team wants the jury to turn this case up or down on Rick Gates, the prosecution star witness.
Yeah, that's absolutely what they've done. And I must say, I applaud them for doing it the way they did. I'm not talking about like the substance and the merits of the case, but what you find a lot of times, I'm just clinically looking at this as a trial lawyer. What you do a lot of times is you decide we're going to try to make this case all about the government's accomplice. And then it comes time to put in the defense case, or the court has to ask you, is the defendant going to testify? Are you going to put in any evidence? And a lot of times these defense lawyers hedge their bets at that point, and they think, you know, we better do something here, because otherwise if this guy gets convicted, they're going to say later on that, you know, we gave him ineffective assistance of counsel, that we should have called witnesses, that we, you know, that we signaled to the jury that we had no defense and all that stuff. Whereas the smart thing to do is, if you believe the best defense in the case is to try to turn the case into an up or down referendum on the government's accomplice, here Gates, then put your money where your mouth is and make the case all about him. And that's exactly what they did. So it may not work, but I do agree with them that it was the best strategy to follow.
And it's the best strategy because Gates is such a slimy figure.
I think it's for that reason, but also, you know, in every one of these cases where you have an accomplice, the accomplice is a slimy figure. I mean, it happens almost 100% of the time. But here, I think the real problem for Mueller, and this is not to say it's not a problem he can't overcome, because let's remember, they were ready to go to trial without Gates, right? They indicted this case without Gates. This case is really proved on these documentary financial records. And Gates, in a lot of ways for them, is gravy. I think he really tightens up the evidence on Manafort's intent more than anything else. The case is based on the documents. But the thing that Mueller did here, which I think could come back to bite him, is the plea deal that he gave to Gates is atrocious. I mean, it's a violation of Justice Department plea policy. You're supposed to force someone who wants to plead guilty and cooperate to plead guilty to at least the most serious, readily provable count, which in this case is bank fraud. So in my old office at the Southern District of New York, that wouldn't have been enough. We would have made a cooperator plead guilty to everything, because if you do that, if the guy lies, he's looking at, you know, years and years in jail. You're not giving him a benefit before he's done anything for you. And at the end, if he does cooperate, you can make a motion that allows the judge to sentence him under the guidelines, even to time served.
What they did with Gates, to the contrary, was a day after pleading, after indicting him to felonies that would have run up like hundreds of years in prison, they pled him out to two minor counts, which capped his exposure at 10 years. They did a number of other technical things. I won't get into the legal weeds of it, but in order to protect him and limit his exposure beneath the sentences that Congress prescribed for some of the crimes. And they basically gave him a big, big benefit before he had done a thing to cooperate with them. So they totally front-loaded it. And what the jury now knows is that here you have Manafort and Gates who have committed exactly the same crimes. And Mueller is asking them to convict Manafort to crimes that will make him spend the rest of his life in jail, whereas he has arranged for Gates to walk out the door on the very same conduct. And I don't think the jury's going to like that.
Interesting. Interesting. Andy McCarthy, former chief assistant U.S. attorney in Manhattan, contributing editor to National Review. You always want to check out his writings on all things legal and some of the specific, more high-profile events like the Manafort trial right now. Some very good analysis. Andy McCarthy, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Have a great weekend.
You too.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
If you're talking about it, I'll be talking about it. Dennis Prager here. Join me this morning at 11 right here on AM560 The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So our friend Greg Livingston, who shut down Lakeshore Drive, marched on Wrigley Field a couple of weeks back, had a presser yesterday in which he announced that he and his Coalition for a New Chicago organization are planning a march to Ravinia, I hope?
No, this one is a march on the Kennedy Expressway near the 190 exit to O'Hare. They're planning on doing this on Monday, on Labor Day, obviously, around 11 a.m. or noon. Mm-hmm. And he said, we need to get Rahm's attention. He's also demanding, too, that Rahm resign immediately.
Yeah. Labor Day is a holiday weekend, and I like what Labor Day represents. It represents the rights of the workers. But just a couple of weeks ago, we had, you know, over 70 people shot, 11 killed. That also was a very inconvenient weekend for many people.
Well, sure.
Good point. But
a lot of blood to clean up.
The protest on Lakeshore Drive happened the Thursday before the most violent weekend we've seen here in decades. So that wasn't effective. They shut down the Dan Ryan. Was that effective? That weekend, 8 people got shot. I think 27, or 8 people died, 27 were shot. So they're going to inconvenience people yet again on shutting down the Kennedy near 190. Dan, I do believe, did you give Reverend Livingston this idea?
No, I mean, we just had a conversation after the Dan Ryan shut down. You know, what other places would it be fun to shut down, fun to make a spectacle of? Uh-huh. I mean, we're not, look, that's what this is about. We're not interested in solving problems in this city. I mean, nobody in charge or much less these race hustlers are interested in reducing violence in the city. They're not interested in taking the steps that are required to do that, not the civilian political leadership and not these professional agitators. So let's just have fun with it, right? Because, I mean, that's all we care about. That's what we've proven at the ballot box repeatedly. So fine. I concede the point. And let's just have fun. So let's just pick spots that would be fun if people congregated and had fun chants and had silly placards and made a spectacle of themselves and disrupted the ordinary course of the day in Chicago. I think that's the point.
312-642-5600 is our turnkey.pro answer line. 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. I'm 100% against this. It's not going to do anything but cause problems for people who are trying to go in and out of O'Hare, coming back from a 3-day weekend, right, you know, the day before we start school at CPS, and it's not going to change anything. So why do it? Illinois State Police, they have jurisdiction over the Kennedy. I'm sure you know because you've probably been pulled over on the Kennedy.
Yeah, I have.
They said that they're going to work with community leaders.
Good.
To seek peaceful resolution to find an alternative route.
No, don't want an alternative route.
Well, they said it's against the law for pedestrians to enter the expressway, including all on and off ramps. protests on the expressway endanger neighboring communities by backing up traffic.
We just did this with the Dan Ryan.
But they're creating extremely hazardous conditions for motorists, which are cause crashes, resulting in serious injury and fatalities.
What is different between that and the Dan Ryan?
Illinois State Police, where they're in charge.
What's the difference?
There is no difference.
No difference.
Which means they're going to have to bring in everybody, which means this is going to cost taxpayer dollars, probably to the tune of $350,000 this time.
Whatever. So what?
It's
stupid. It's about entertainment. And there's no difference. You've already ceded the point. The city has already ceded the point with the Dan Ryan shutdown. It's ceded the point with the Lakeshore Drive shutdown. So how do you draw a line you've erased? How do you redraw it? You can't. This is all gone. This is done. That's done. That's going to happen. Now the only thing that's interesting to me is encouraging them to go other places. So suggested before, like the Neutra High School polo team for their matches against Barrington or something. For the Neutra Barrington High School polo match, go disrupt that.
You guys suggested a soccer game in Winnetka.
Yeah.
Even an AYSO.
I don't know.
Oh, Ravinia.
Yeah.
Stop Cool and the Gang from performing at Ravinia.
Yeah, exactly. Earth, Wind, and Fire, so I don't want to disrupt their show. Who do I want to inflict them on?
See, that's the thing. Their message, they were so unorganized.
Steely Dan.
Steely Dan.
Yeah, I don't care if it's the Steely Dan. So, and there's a lot of Steely Dan fans, I'm sure, because they're fans of terrible music up on the North Shore. So go disrupt the Ravinia Steely Dan concert whenever that comes around again. I know they do it every summer, don't they?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so do that. Do something like that. Not Christopher Cross. Leave him alone. Leave Earth, Wind & Fire alone. Leave Buddy Guy and George Thorogood alone.
ABBA cover band.
They could disrupt that. I'd be fine with that.
I'm just getting sick of this, and it is the busiest travel day, travel days of the year.
Boo-hoo. It's the city that you've built, Chicago. It's the most segregated city in the country. It's the most violent city in the country. It's the city with the highest debt load per capita in the country, effectively. It's the worst-run city in America. The worst-run big city in America. And now you're going to complain to me about, oh, my gosh, I could get inconvenience. Tough. This is what you wanted, so you're getting it.
T.O. Hardiman, who joined with Livingston for the Lakeshore Drive protest, is not joining them this time.
Oh, my gosh.
Listen
he
to
lost
this.
T.O.
He lost T.O. and about 10 people or maybe 20. They don't plan to participate because they know that people will get arrested. He said, I'm not against Reverend Livingston, but I'm against people going to jail, and I'm not doing that and putting my people in that position. Instead, he's having an African-American Unity Day in Lawndale.
Oh, great.
As a way to prevent people from getting involved in violence.
Yeah.
That moonwalk doing.
Finally,
Unity
Day. Finally, a Unity Day. That's what we've needed in Lawndale. Unity Day, some novelty T-shirts, perhaps.
Maybe some squishy balls.
Yeah, maybe a candlelight vigil at dusk. Sure.
This is just getting tiresome.
Oh, this is the part that's getting tiresome.
All of it's tiresome.
Yeah.
But
well, that's why people are leaving. Vince in Hinsdale. Hinsdale's another good place.
Yeah, Dan, Amy, good morning. Yeah, I just want, Dan, you're exactly right. These so-called leaders, and they're taking the people on the expressway, blah, blah. Listen, none of that's going to change until Rahm Emanuel is out of office, and hopefully the Democratic Party leaves Chicago.
Yeah, all right, thanks for the call, Vince.
A lot of vacancies if that happens.
No, I hate to do it, but maybe, like, if you wanted to, if Greg Livingston and Coalition for New Chicago, if they wanted to interrupt, like, a Hinsdale-Burridge cricket game, like a high school cricket game down there.
No, don't you do that.
That'd be fine. That'd be fine with me.
Cricket game.
Deborah in Arlington Heights.
Good morning. Do they really think that gangbangers, drug dealers, sociopaths really care about their marching and they're going to go, oh, wow, we've got a problem with violence in Chicago? Any rational thinking person that lives here knows we have a problem. This costs taxpayers money, and it's just pandering, failed Democrat, socialist, rule in Chicago and Illinois, that's the only way it's going to end.
Yeah.
No, it's going to end because they're going to arrest them this time, and then they're not going to do this stupid stunt again.
Yeah, we'll see.
I'm
about
demanding that they arrest them.
Oh, gosh.
Time.
Oh,
well, they didn't last time, and it was so stupid. And then you had somebody, you know, convict Jason Van Dyke, free Puerto Rico, 51st state, bring down Trump and Pence. I mean, it was such a hodgepodge of just.
So what?
Weirdness.
Nobody got arrested in the Dan Ryan shutdown. Nobody got arrested in the Lakeshore Holy Drive shit. Shutdown. You said those things are indistinguishable, so why should anybody get arrested this time?
Because, just to stop because. It from happening in the future.
No, it's not going to stop
it. If they don't
it.
Take a stand now, that's going to go on.
So they get arrested, they get fined.
On.
They get fined with a little, like, you know, disturbing of the peace. That'll just encourage them. And it should. To encourage them to, let's see, where else could we, let's spin the wheel. Or, you know, I mean, I don't know, that's Republican term. Maybe, let's see. I'll tell you what. How about when, you know, we're almost in the fall sports season.
Oh, don't touch the football.
How about shut down a Proviso East Proviso West basketball game? What about that?
No.
Why not? Why not? Why not go to West Central Cook County too? What's wrong with that? Mm-mm. I mean, a big rivalry game.
Right.
All right, fine. Go Southside. Go shut down. I don't know what, Mount Carmel versus,
Joliet Catholic.
Yeah. Let's do that. That's not bad.
I like that for being,
that could be a good rivalry. Or go again, Naperville, Naperville Central, Naperville North.
That's a big one.
Shut that down. There's a lot of people there. I'd be fine with that. Stay away from Bennett Academy. But you can do that.
No, we're going
Bennett. Public schools.
No, we're going Catholic.
No, let's do the public schools. Let's do Naperville Central, Naperville North. By the way, with respect to, the shutdown, they know that it's not going to, I mean, we talked to Greg. They know it's not going to change the reality on the ground. But why shouldn't they just preen before the cameras and feel like they're doing something? That's what they see their elected leaders doing. So why, nobody in the city wants to hold the mayor and the 50 trained SEALs on the city council accountable. So why are you getting upset with the protesters? That's what they have seen us as a collective do in this city and the state, which is why Illinois is the worst governed state in the history of America, and Chicago is the worst governed city in the country. So why should community leaders or civic activists, why should they do anything different? You like this. We like this. That's what we've said. And now we're going to complain about some disruptions. Boo frackin' who? John in Palatine.
Hey, Dan and Amy. I just, I'm pretty upset or even offended with the fact that I just can't believe that these liberal leftists think that, where do they think they have the right to impose their beliefs by shutting down expressways for good, hardworking people? And you know, 20 years ago, they'd be arrested. And I just want to make one more point regarding the security clearances. If we worked at the office supply store and we left the company, or they left us for that matter, you know, they take our key card away, they give us a box, and they turn our passwords off. And I would think security clearance should be more important, and it can always be reinstated.
Thanks for the call, John. You know, I'll get back to the security clearance issue. Megan on the south side, where the protests could be coming to that Mount Carmel Jelly Catholic square off.
Yeah, wonderful. Good morning, guys. I just wanted to say, of course, the violence is about the drug dealing. It's about the drug sales in the territory. And why don't these people get together and go stand in these drug spots and shut them down for a day and make them inconvenienced and lose money? I think that might be, I mean, maybe not effective to stop the problem, but inconvenience the right people at least.
Well, thanks for the call, Megan. You know, those drug operations tend to be fairly mobile. So I'm not sure. And also, I don't know how much coverage that would get. And remember, media coverage, shaming the public is part of it. And that's why, and the nice thing it affords is for the most savage of Illinois residents, white liberals, the real savages, the barbarians in this state, it gives them the opportunity to feel good about themselves. So when they march to Wrigley Field, you'd see these little white liberals that go to the cult that Amy goes to in Lakeview, like say, hey, I'm with the protesters. If I didn't have to go to this Cubs game, I'd be right out there with you.
Oh, it was so weird, too, because all of them were inside the game looking down on people and going like, yay.
Yeah, it's entertainment for white liberals. And that's the most important thing we can do in Chicago is entertain white liberals and allow them to feel good about themselves and morally superior to those with whom they disagree. Rick and Joliet.
Hey, Dan, you know, I couldn't agree with you more on this. And I mean, your point is very well taken. My concern here is how, I mean, I know this is a broad question, but how do we stop it? I'm a constitutionalist, okay? In New York, they cleaned up New York with the stop and frisk or suspending the Fourth Amendment or however you want to characterize that. But how would we, what would the first step be? And I don't think there's a political will to do anything here. And I'm kind of the mind that if you're going to clear this problem up, you go down there and you blow the situation up. But that's not really constitutional now, is it?
Well, thanks for the call. I mean, there was a good piece in the City Journal we referenced earlier this week on the topic by Bill Bratton, the former police commissioner in New York, about sort of advanced policing techniques, including what was used, the combination of a bunch of techniques that was used in New York to make that city a lot safer, clean up Times Square, broken windows as a part of it, big data informing policing as a part of it. But the civilian political authority has to back the play. When Giuliani was mayor, you had a civilian political authority that backed Bratton's play. We don't have that here. And so on the government side, you're never going to quell the problem, much less reduce it, if you don't have the political authority backing the play of the frontline police officers and first responders. And then on the cultural side, you have to have a real conversation about the Chicago Public Schools, Abuse Inc., and about the welfare state and how it's destroyed minority families, destroyed all families who have succumbed to it, but most disproportionately minority families in Chicago, and government not raising kids, so better get dads back in the home. You have to have that conversation too. So there's a lot of cultural changes that need to be made medium term and long term, and then there's some kind of public safety changes that could be made immediately if you had a different power structure in the city and state. But I know we don't want that, so nothing's going to change. So we'll just keep entertaining ourselves and talking about which football game or croquet match on the North Shore that these protesters are going to shut down.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And, this is the danger I face in this job of working with a right-wing extremist like you, Amy.
Oh, right.
I have.
I'm so extreme.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm a moderate extremist?
People are calling in, and they're making threats against me now because of you and your incendiary rhetoric. Our last segment, the last hour, we were talking about the shutdown of the Kennedy that's been proposed for Labor Day.
Yeah, near O'Hare Airport. Right.
And so we batted that back and forth, took some calls, and we got a call from a gentleman who referred to us as condescending corksuckers, to borrow a Roman Moroneism.
Wait, me?
Plural.
Excuse.
Plural.
Yeah. Excuse you. I think maybe he was talking about you.
Right. And I take offense at condescending. And,
and I take offense at the latter.
Of course. And here's the thing. He said that because this is Hug a Journalist Day.
Oh, right.
And I would.
Yesterday was Eat a Donut. Today's Hug a Journalist.
And I would broaden it in the wake of these wonderful groupthink editorials that the D.C. Press Corps is promulgating in their outlets to prove how independent they are, that it'd be extended to the entire media. So that would include us. Okay. Hug a member of the media day. And this guy called in to say that we crossed the line. We can't play his voicemail without his permission. We've asked for his permission. We've called to have him come on the air and address us directly because he's a big, tough guy leaving a voicemail, but he's been unwilling to do that.
Can we cold call him?
Well, I'd be happy to have him on the air to express in, PG language his views.
Well, I love hearing opposing views.
Most of these guys are like internet cowboys and voicemail heroes. Mm-hmm. But they're not good at interpersonal discussions. But anyway, he said, we cross the line and they're coming for us. The liberals will be coming for us. So better get ready because they're coming for us.
Do I have to arm Peyton and Eli? Is that what you're saying?
Peyton and Eli are your arms. I mean, see how big Peyton
they're
is?
They're my muscle. Oh, he's 6'3", 200 pounds right now.
Peyton
and
would,
growing.
Peyton would make this guy who called in, I'm guessing, a stain on the road.
And then my pit bull, otherwise known as Bunky, you know.
I don't think Bunky is much of a line of a defense.
No, she can be pretty violent if she needs to be.
Yeah. I've seen that dog. I wouldn't.
I mean, she can't really bite because she got an underbite, but she tries.
Yeah. I'd go with Peyton over Bunky in terms of personal protection. But no, I'd love to have him on. And also, too, if he's unwilling to come on, but he's still listening because, you know, he called into the show in response to our segment, the 7:30 segment. I mean, if he'd like to leave another voicemail, shoot me an email, dan@danprof.com, where he would like to meet to have this discussion in person.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to be there.
We could do that, too.
You two have fun at lunch.
Because I don't want to make it inconvenient for you to come for me.
Oh.
Liberal tough guy. Don't want to make it inconvenient. So you want to get this on? You want to? I mean, I appreciate the voicemail for exposing the savage white liberal for exactly the barbarian I was describing in the 7:35 hour. That's what you are. That's what this society is beset by, particularly this city and state. We have enough problems in Chicago, and most of them are at the doorstep of the white liberal. Just so I can restate what I said previously, so there's no confusion about it. Because I know that's what set him off, because he feels very good about himself, as do all the white liberals who've destroyed Chicago and Illinois and would like to, and other institutions they infect, from the arts to higher ed to K-12 education, for that matter. So, yeah, anybody wants to have that meeting, wants to come at me, wants to make me pay for crossing that line, please come. And I don't want to do it here because I want to, you know, kind of involve other people. Don't want to be involved. So that's why I say, just
get in a fist fight.
Tell me where you want to meet.
Okay.
You want to bring your friends? Bring your friends, and I'll bring my friends.
It has to be Sean from Elwood Park and his posse.
We can bring.
Because they are there. I saw them on a street corner and I got scared. I walked the other way.
It can be a friendly get together. And we'll discuss things if you want to discuss. And if you think you're going to make anybody pay beyond a civil discussion, then we'll see about that.
I guess I need to listen to this voicemail.
Yeah.
Too bad we can't play it.
I have the voicemail pitched if you guys want to hear it. It's pitched lower so you can't identify him.
Oh.
Is that legal?
Are we on safe ground? Amy can't afford an FCC fine.
I can't.
Let me check.
The
afford
FCC,
any more litigation.
As I've often said, the FCC won't let me be.
So let me be. Why can't it be?
Thank you for
ruining it.
If you were going to step on the M&M line, then you should actually know it so you could get it right.
Say it again. The FCC won't let me be.
Or let me be me, so let me see.
Bingo.
Yeah. Nice
won't
try.
Happen again, Chief.
When it comes to white liberal rappers, that's my.
Okay. Oh, that's your.
That's
don't
my
cross
purview.
Into my lane.
It's my domain. Greg and Schomburg, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer. Have you hugged a journalist today?
Oh, absolutely. Dan, I think you're on safe ground on this thing, though. One of the basic things of life is that no one would mess with a 6-foot blonde who's known as promo code Amy.
Yeah.
There's no way. You're safe.
Go, Amy.
She's my personal protection.
Mm. Exactly.
Thanks for the call, Greg. Yep.
What's in your pocket? Oh, it could be mace. Could be a banana. Could be my car keys.
Who are you talking to? What are you talking about?
Your imaginary family.
You're not inspiring a lot of confidence as my personal
as
protection.
As your protection?
Tom in Deer Park.
Oh, good morning, Dan and Amy. I was upset to hear about that caller. Currently, me and a few other listeners were marching from Deer Park toward your studio.
Oh, good.
We've got your back. We've got your back, and anybody wants to join us, we'll be coming down. Matter of fact, we're going to take over the Jane Addams.
All right.
We'll be on there, but it's for you guys.
All right. Thanks for the call, Tom. Appreciate it. It's nice to see somebody shut down a thoroughfare for our benefit.
Yeah.
So appreciate Tom in Deer Park and his posse. Robert in Oak Brook.
Real quick, Dan, I'm 6'4".
All right.
I weigh 220 pounds, and I work out every freaking day, and I'll stand shoulder to shoulder with
you. What's your 40 time?
40. What's my 40 time? How about I bench 350 pounds?
All right. All right. So you're going to be a team anchor there. All right.
But real quick, Dan, I want to know why these people, a friend of mine called me from Australia, and he said, Robert, he goes, shutting down Lakeshore Drive and then having one of the bloodiest weekends a day later, he goes, did a lot of good, didn't it?
Yeah, well.
And he said, he goes, how many millions of dollars do they spend, and why don't they spend those millions of our taxpayer dollars better serving the communities that are shooting each other up?
Because we don't like that here. We don't like when they do that here. We like...
I'm just putting something out there from someone from Australia. And again, he also said, he goes, Rob, when they took away all of our guns in Australia, crime rate went up dramatically.
That's the common sense that's lacking here. By the way, Robert, so how many reps of 350 can you do?
Six.
All right. All right. That's pretty good. All right. You're in. All right. We'll be.
And I'm 60 years old, so I think I'm in pretty good shape.
That's pretty impressive.
All right. You guys have a great morning. Good show as always.
Thanks for the call, Robert. Appreciate it. And the personal protection. David and McCook.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, Amy, if you end up going to jail for that, I got you. I'll send you some commissary money so you can buy some ramen noodles.
Thank you very much. That's very thoughtful of you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call, David. David is already getting us, thinking about the other side of the event, the discussion group that we may form.
Well, the thing is, you don't throw the first punch. You have to be hit first, then you fight back. That's how that works. Never, ever throw the first punch.
Unless you want to end the fight.
Okay.
Actually.
From a legal standpoint, it'd be better off if you threw the second punch.
From a legal standpoint, the way you do it is you throw the first punch, you end the fight, and then you have a bunch of witnesses say you didn't throw the first punch.
And that's why you need Sean from Elmwood Park and his posse.
By the way, they're not just coming after me. These voicemail heroes, tough guys. Masterpiece Cake Shop. Masterpiece Cake Shop in Colorado. Just won that big Supreme Court case, 7-2, against the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. Being dragged into court again, effectively dragged into court. Jack Phillips, the owner of the cake shop, filed a lawsuit against the Colorado Civil Rights Division after being notified on June 28th that it had found probable cause to believe that Phillips and his cake shop violated a Colorado law that would require his business to create or bake a cake for Autumn Scardina, an attorney who wanted to celebrate the anniversary of her transition from male to female.
I mean, honestly...
So here we go again.
Here we go again. They're just trying to make a name for themselves, antagonists.
They're trying to put this guy out of business because he won. And because he is a Christian and he believes in his faith and he wants to live his faith. And so he didn't want to participate in a same-sex wedding ceremony. And he doesn't want to make a birthday cake for somebody who is pretending to be a woman. Doesn't want to do that. Scardina said, as was the case in the other, as was the situation of the other case, the employee on the phone at the cake shop didn't object to her request for a birthday cake until she said she was celebrating her transition. Right. Well, that's where the religious freedom piece kicks in. The cake shop claimed that Jack Phillips said he couldn't make between 2 and 5 custom cakes per week because of time constraints, and that he doesn't support a message that promotes the idea that a person's sex is anything other than an immutable, God-given biological reality. So here we go again, litigating it. So the left will come, and they'll keep coming, and if you win, and even if the Supreme Court affirms your right to religious liberty in this country, although narrowly in the Colorado Masterpiece Cake Shop case, a more expansive reading of religious liberty is probably in the offing for exactly this reason, that it's going to be targeted from another direction. Why did Autumn Scardina choose Masterpiece Cake Shop? Why do you think? Ben Sass, Nebraska senator, made the point that a state powerful enough to tell bakers what to bake is powerful enough to tell journalists what stories to write. This is not healthy for our country. Yeah, might want to think about that on Hug a Journalist Day. D.C. Press Corps, all of the leftist cranks in the media sharing the same op-ed across the pages of their outlets. A state powerful enough to tell bakers what to bake is powerful enough to tell journalists what stories to write.
This is the Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. When you've got questions, he always has an answer. It's Sean Hannity, this afternoon at 2, right before Joe Walsh at 5 on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So the big story today, John Brennan's security clearance revoked by the president yesterday, former CIA director.
Do you think he's still crying this morning?
Habitual liar. He was crying all over the pages of the New York Times about how he's being silenced. Yeah, I know. The irony is lost on him. On MSNBC yesterday about how he's being silenced and, you know, intimidated.
I do believe that Mr. Trump decided to take this action, as he's done with others, to try to intimidate and suppress any criticism of him or his administration. And revoking my security clearances is his way of trying to get back at me. But I think I have tried to voice the concerns of millions of Americans about Mr. Trump's failures in terms of fulfilling the responsibilities of that sacred and solemn office of the presidency. And this is not going to deter me at all.
No, it's clearly not. And thank goodness, despite John Brennan's comparisons of Trump to foreign dictators, despite his suggestion that Trump is a traitor and has committed treason, an offense punishable by death, oh, by the way, Brennan does have access to the media. It seems to me, rather than silencing anybody, Trump wants more communication. Well, it's always more communication. And Brennan's op-ed in the New York Times, President Trump's claims of no collusion are hogwash, but Brennan's still prosecuting his case, the same case that he takes credit for opening up based on pitching that phony baloney dossier around.
Right. And he's called him a traitor and a danger to this country. Brennan's just upset right now and pouting because he can't get the access that he needs to be effective at his job as a, you know, he's a contributor to NBC.
There's
makes
more,
6 figures a year.
I mean, just so we're clear, there's more evidence of Russian collusion against John Brennan than there is President Trump at this point. Because one thing we know is that John Brennan voted for Gus Hall for president in 1976, the Communist Party candidate. So, I mean, if you just want to talk, I mean, and you might as well, I mean, based on John Brennan's standard of evidence, you might as well spin a conspiracy theory about him the way that he does about Trump just to illustrate the point, because that's what his op-ed does. A bunch of conspiracy theories about people who personally profited and whether the only question now is whether Trump associates were part of a criminal conspiracy, if it rises to the level of criminality, not just sort of, not illegal collusion with Russians, when in point of fact, what we understand can and is coming into clear focus through Lee Smith's investigation at realclearinvestigations.com. We discussed yesterday Kim Strassel's reporting, Byron York's reporting, is maybe where we've been looking, and the D.C. press corps has been purposely looking at this all the wrong way this entire time. And the only evidence of any collusion with Russian interests was on the Hillary Clinton intelligence and law enforcement agency senior leadership side. So the question is, should you stop with John Brennan or should you move to some of the other Obama era officials that are under consideration with respect to their security clearance? Rice and Power and Hayden and Clapper. Maybe even some Department of Justice officials who should be perhaps former Department of Justice officials like Bruce Orr. For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined by Bill Gertz. He is senior editor for the Washington Free Beacon and author of the book I War, War and Peace in the Information Age. Bill, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hi, good to be on the program.
Now, I put this to Alberto Gonzalez earlier in the show, but there's a piece by Tom Rogan in the Washington Examiner, left-winger, suggesting that Trump was wrong to suspend Brennan's clearance because there could be ongoing initiatives, operations in CIA where Brennan, even though he has called the president a traitor, may have some insight that would be beneficial to national security. Obviously, that's a determination that the president made the other way. But do you have any concerns that Brennan has any value to add to this administration?
No, I think he's displayed his opposition to the president and his administration. And there's a fundamental misunderstanding about security clearances. Ultimately, the buck stops at the president. A lot of times the intelligence community seems to think that security clearances are their purview and that they can grant them and take them away. And they've used that as kind of a weapon. They used it early on in the Trump administration by pulling the clearances of people that they didn't like, people that the president had picked to work in the White House. And then the intelligence community said, well, they're not qualified to have security clearances. And I would also point out, too, that this happened under the Obama administration. I know a senior Pentagon contractor, his name is Bill Cowan. He was a Fox News contributor, but he worked on a lot of classified programs, and he made a film. He appeared in a film that was critical of Obama, and as a result of that, they pulled his clearances. So it's it's not unusual. Brennan's making a lot of noises about having his clearances pulled, but it was certainly appropriate based on all of the comments and things that he had been saying.
Well, the mainstream media is acting like this is unprecedented. This has never happened before, and you're saying that this has happened before, and it probably will happen again. Who do you think else, is on the list that Sarah Sanders read off yesterday that might have their security clearance yanked?
Well, it's kind of a tradition. One of the things that when you grant access to secrets, you want to be very careful about how you handle the people that have access to those secrets. So a lot of times when someone in a very high-level position, we're talking about like the National Security Advisor or in the case of what they're looking at, I think it's probably Samantha Power, who was the UN ambassador, and Susan Rice, who was the National Security Advisor. You don't want to upset these people, and it's kind of a security measure that you don't want to do things that would turn them into disgruntled former employees. So that's kind of always been the tradition, that you kind of leave these people have some access. They may sit on some kind of advisory boards for intelligence organizations or national security organizations. But in this case, there have been reports. I think the House Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes has been very instrumental in showing that in the case of Susan Rice and Samantha Power, that they may have acted inappropriately in the so-called unmasking, the misuse of intelligence. In other words, they asked for raw intelligence reports to identify the names of Americans. And this seems to have been part of a pattern at the late Obama administration when they were trying to find out information about so-called Russian collusion. So I would say those two people are probably on the list, Samantha Power and Susan Rice.
And what of the unmasking, and why is it that we can't seem to obtain more information, more specific information about it, and particularly as it relates to General Michael Flynn, the one crime we know that has been committed that nobody seems particularly interested in resolving?
Yeah, I would guess that the reason that Devin Nunes has not been successful in getting access to the records and the trail of unmasking is that there's probably a leak investigation underway, because that seems to be at the heart of a lot of the disclosures that came out early on. There were some really damaging leaks that came out in the very first months of the Trump administration, which revealed that the president's conversations and I think that this was part of an effort by leftover Obama people to try to undermine the Trump administration. So I think that the reason that Congress is having trouble getting at that is that there's probably some ongoing leak investigation.
You're sort of at the intersection of this conversation, both with your intel expertise as well as being a member of the media, senior editor for the Washington Free Beacon. And so the media's lionizing of John Brennan, it's fascinating to me, the lack of institutional memory or the purposeful forgetfulness. John Brennan, who supported the enhanced interrogation techniques, torture post 9/11 that the media vilified Dick Cheney over. John Brennan, who lied to Congress about CIA hacking into the computers of members of the Senate Intelligence Committee. John Brennan, who lied to Congress and the American people about the collateral damage inflicted by drone strikes. I mean, this is somebody who 4 years ago, liberal op-ed writers were calling for President Obama to fire. But now, because he's a vociferous critic of Donald Trump, he's what he calls Bob Mueller, a national treasure.
Yeah, a lot of hypocrisy there on the part of the mainstream media. I would also add that Brennan instituted a number of really disastrous reforms when he was the head of CIA, according to my sources and who were part of the CIA at the time. He basically devastated the operations directorate by mixing in to the operators a number of analysts, and in so doing, he sort of politicized the CIA in a major way. And those reforms haven't been undone. The CIA is still in kind of turmoil, especially its operations directorate. That's something that I think Congress should take a look at. You know, what happened under John Brennan's watch at CIA? And is the CIA an organization that is in need of reform?
And maybe even a more global conversation about the politicization of justice, FBI and CIA, and to some extent NSA, when guys like Hayden are over there, too, tweeting pictures of Auschwitz to compare to Trump's family separation policy at the border. The politicization of all these intelligence and law enforcement agencies that really rely on credibility with the American public as institutions of federal law enforcement and national security.
Well, certainly FBI, I think that's the case. I mean, there definitely needs to be some type of reform effort, or at least a commission to look into the politicization. I mean, you have three top FBI officials who were fired. They weren't just dismissed. They were fired summarily. And they were fired because they basically disgraced the FBI. I think that should warrant a major push by our congressional branch to look into this issue, as you said, of politicization of our national security bureaucracy.
He is Bill Gertz, senior editor for the Washington Free Beacon. The book, I War, War and Peace in the Information Age. Bill, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, we'll take a call or two here on the matter of John Brennan. We were discussing with Bill Gertz from Washington Free Beacon. John in Schererville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, I think you're an excellent guest from the Washington Beacon. The only comment I had for Army Reserves being pulled out of retirement four times is you're granted a security clearance, but it expires 2 years after your orders. So I don't know why the news media is so confused about how these secret clearances are maintained, but they should all evaporate after a certain period of time so that you could review things.
Yeah, thanks for the call, John. Appreciate that perspective. But you're right. I mean, the media is not interested in the nuances. D.C. Press Corps is not interested in the nuances of this story, how security clearances work, what the history of the,
what the protocol
removals and assignments have been. They're just interested in saying, oh, Trump is trying to hide something. They're interested in prosecuting John Brennan's case for him.
And they're saying it's payback. They said Brennan criticized the president, so this is payback for what he did. When in actuality, I don't think it is. I think it's a great move that President Trump made. And if others, you know, make money off of intelligence information that is supposed to be kept secret, they should have their clearance yanked, too.
And even if it is in part payback, if there's no possibility that he has any value to our national security, then why should he have that clearance? He shouldn't. Now he doesn't.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.